Welcome, intrepid listeners, to another review episode of Between the Bubbles. I am Brayden.
And I am Darren.
And we're very excited to be recording here this rainy Saturday morning to bring this to you Monday and to tell you all about what we read this week, what we loved, what we hated, all that kind of stuff. For those of you who may be new listeners, we do it alphabetically by publisher and then by book title, and we give one of three ratings. Adore it. It was great. You should all go buy it. Explore it. Maybe if you like that sort of thing, and ignore it, by all means, save your money. So that's how this is going to work, and we have a ton to get through this week, so we'll try to be as quick as we can so that it's not too overwhelmingly large of an episode for you. Let's start with some Dark Horse books. First up, we have Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now, for those of you who don't know, I'm a huge Buffy fan. I have been since the show was originally aired, and I just recently got my wife to watch it with me, and she loved it as well because it's a great piece of television history. If you haven't watched it, by all means, it's on the Netflix instant. Go watch it because it's one of the best shows ever. Anyway, it's also had two seasons in comic form afterwards. This is halfway through season 9. This is issue 14, and we've got a totally new main character, a totally new situation here. Buffy was not in the book at all. This is a story about Billy the Vampire Slayer, and this was, without a doubt, the best comic of season 9 that I have read so far.
Is Billy from the TV show?
No.
He's just introduced right here.
He's just a young gay youth in a small town in California who is trying to fight the zompires to try to keep his town safe.
Oh, he's gay.
Yes. And this was...
good for diversity.
This was a touch... well, Buffy has plenty of diversity, let's be straight. Other than people of color. There's not a whole lot of people of color in Buffy. But when it comes to sexual orientations, they run the gamut. I adored this. This is easily the best issue of season 9, maybe the best of the whole comic series, including season 8. It was written by Jane Espenson, who wrote for Buffy and Firefly, and is one of my favorite, one of Joss's collaborators. And she did stellar work here. It was just beautiful. It made me smile a lot. And... if you were thinking, you know, I liked Buffy the TV show, maybe I should get into the comic. Here, issue 14, it's time to get into the comic, and you'll love it. That's all I have to say about it. Adore it. Next up, Conan the Barbarian. It's a Brian Wood book. It's Brian Wood week, after all. Three of his books came out this week, and three of his books were amazing.
Who did the artwork on this one?
This one was Vasilis Lolos again. So it wasn't quite up to the snuff of Becky Cloonan, who did the first issue of this art, but Vasilis Lolos does good work. It's very solid artwork. It was an end of a very stellar arc. I love these characters. Brian Wood has taken, again, a property that I never would have cared about and turned it into something that I am very excited about every month. I do hope Cloonan is back soon. We wrapped up this arc really quick. Maybe a little too quick. It was a little expository heavy, but they needed to wrap it up here to get back to the ship, to get back on the ocean, and it was really well structured. I really enjoyed it. And again, Brian Wood just does some of the best work in comics these days. He's just phenomenal. So you should all be buying this book. If you're not, that's okay. Start at number 10. It's a new arc. Anyway, I adored it. It was beautiful. Okay, The Creep, issue 2. This is the penultimate issue of The Creep. It's only 4 issues, issues 0 through 3.
I might go pick up 1 now, because I thought it was an ongoing, so I stopped after 0.
Yeah, you stopped after 0. 1 was its weakest, but this was a very solid issue. It's filled with mystery, it's filled with intrigue, and there's a lot of foreshadowing for what I think we're going to see in issue 3 when it all wraps up. And it's just... it's been a stellar series. I really just want to get some answers. I've got a lot of ideas about where this book is going to go in its last issue, but I won't tell you what any of them are. But this was on the cusp between Explore It and Adore It. If the last issue turns out good, this is a series you'll want to pick up the trade for. It really is. If the last issue deflates, I'll tell you next month. But yeah. This is on the cusp between Explore It and Adore It. It was a really solid third issue. Yeah, even though it's number 2, it's the third issue. And lastly, another Brian Wood book, The Massive, number 5. This is his creator-owned property about this post-apocalyptic world where this boat, the Capitol, which used to be a It used to be a some radical environmentalist who owned this boat, and they were going around trying to shut down, you know, refineries and all this kind of stuff on the ocean. But in this post-apocalyptic society, they're just trying to survive. And this was a beautiful, beautiful issue. I was surprised at how much I liked the art. Gary Brown didn't do supreme art in the fourth issue, but this was beautiful. It was done very, very well. The characters get more and more complex with every issue. Mary, one of the three main characters. There's Callum, Israel, Mag, and Mary. Those are the three main characters, and then there's the rest of the crew. This was a very Mary-centric issue. I don't think we saw Mag or Callum at all, really. And I'm just curious to find out more about Mary. She's a bad A.
Now I forget, is this an ongoing or is this limited?
This is an ongoing. This is an ongoing. I don't know how long it'll go. I think he's got... Brian Wood tends to, when he does an ongoing like this, he has a general idea of where he wants it to go and about how many issues. He did the same thing with a series called Northlanders.
Mm-hmm.
He had a general idea of where he wanted it to go, and he went with it, and it worked great. I haven't read it, but I've heard really good things about it. And I think I'd like to at some point, because I really enjoy Wood's writing style. So I'm giving this an adore it. You should be picking up this book.
So far, two Brian Wood books, you're going to adore it for this month.
Next one, too, baby.
Really?
Next one.
That's 2 months in a row.
The guy is amazing. Brian Wood Week is an exciting week at the comic bookstore because you know you're buying three books that are great. Anyway, that's Dark Horse. Those four, you should go buy all of them because it was a great week from Dark Horse this week. The only one that wasn't an adore it was maybe The Creep, maybe. The rest of them were all adore it's. Thank you, Dark Horse, for doing a wonderful week in comics. I don't know what else came out from you, but those four were all great. Anyway, let's talk some DC.
Yes.
I know most of what you have is DC, so we'll actually hear some...
Yeah, I'll start getting more Marvel, and Marvel now really gets full steam ahead.
But yeah, but we'll actually get to hear Darren's dulcet tones. To start out, we have Ame Kami Girls featuring Wonder Woman, issue number one.
How was this? Because I've been curious, because I saw some sneak peeks, and it looks like to me they just got all the female characters in the DC universe, gave them big boobs, skinty costumes, and then just whatever.
And a cool storyline, though.
Really?
Yes, it's all the hotties from the Marvel Universe with enormous boobs. Or, yeah, the DC Universe with enormous boobs and skimpy outfits. But also really well written. I was surprised at how much I liked it. And the important thing is that they're all going to tie together. I thought they were just going to be one-shots with, you know, here's a Wonder Woman story, here's a Batgirl story, here's a Power Girl story.
Well, no, they've been releasing them digitally, and there's about... I think two or three per character. There's about eight now on the digital.
Yeah, well, they're going to be... The important thing is this told the whole story of Wonder Woman discovering the world of men, coming out to the world, fighting with Cheetah, and then the last two pages, we see the overarching idea. We have Duella Dent, Catwoman, and Poison Ivy teaming up to do something.
Hmm.
We don't know what that something is. So in terms of art, is this book a TNA book? Yes. Yes, it is. And if you know that going in, don't be surprised. Most representations outside of Cliff Chang of Wonder Woman are TNA interpretations.
Yeah,
of Wonder
and
Woman.
I hate it.
It's just what you do, you know? In comics, you make their boobs enormous and their waists non-existent and...
Their butts huge.
But...
Not huge, but you know what I'm saying. Accentuate their butts.
In this series, Diana kicks some serious butt. She really does. She kicks a lot of butt, even if her outfit is ridiculously skimpy. And I'm just excited to see how they all kind of tie them together. Because it says, continued next month in Ame Kami Girls, number 2, Batgirl. So, I guess they're calling it Batgirl number 1. I guess they're going to call each one featuring so-and-so number 1, number 1, number 1. But they're all going to tie together, and I'm curious to see how they all tie together. I'm going to give it an explore it. It's an interesting combination of art and writing because I feel like Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray do good work with it. They've been doing a lot of the little stuff on the edges of the DC Universe. They wrote that Rose and Thorn one-shot that I really liked.
Uh-huh.
But they also wrote Phantom Lady and Dollman, who I hated.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. They're doing a lot of stuff on the fringes, and this was solid. I will pick up Batgirl next month.
Really?
Yeah, I'll pick up Batgirl. I'm curious to see where they go
with it. I think Batgirl's the only one that's, like, not TNA.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it all turns out. I enjoyed it enough that I'll pick it up.
Interesting.
Okay, Batgirl.
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 The ongoing series. Let's be straight though. Before we start, this is not really a tie into the death of the family.
Two pages of it ties in.
Yeah, but the cover, the cover to the death of the family is creepy, phenomenal. Now, your complaint is that they don't actually give masks, which would be cool if they gave you a Joker mask.
I do wish it was a mask. That would be awesome.
Oh my gosh, seeing the Joker skin over Barbara Gordon's costume. Oh,
so gross.
It's so cool. Anyway, I've been kind of, you know, on the fence about Batgirl since, well, even when it first started, Night of the Owls. This is the best issue since number 9 when the Night of the Owls happened.
Without a doubt.
Like, Nightfall went from, to me, a boring character to now being her best villain that she's ever had.
And,
in the ongoing New 52.
And I think the thing that I loved about this is how at the end it brought back all the other enemies that we've seen so far.
It makes you really interested to see how that's going to tie in.
They have built, Gail Simone has built here a pretty great rogues gallery for Barbara Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the last 13 issues.
Yeah, because you have Mirror, you have Grotesque.
You have Gretel.
Yep, yep.
And so I'm curious to see who the people are getting them out of jail. Where that's all going to
go. Well, the people getting out of jail are the ones that worked for Nightfall.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, that's what I think, at least. And then you see James Gordon and his involvement.
And we're still... And according to Gail, we won't see anything about James until after the death of the family is over. But that's when things are going to get real creepy with James.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
This was I'm going to give it a door. I actually really love this issue. And the artwork by Ed Benes is...
Ed Benes
such
is
a great...
He is
great
perfect.
Addition.
I worried about him on this book, but... He's a perfect, perfect artist for this book.
Yeah.
And that tie-in, spoiler alert, skip 20 seconds ahead, clowns showing up on her mother's doorstep.
Just like
with
they do.
Guns.
Just, and the one in the middle looks like how the Joker was dressed.
Yep. So that is, man, the Joker's a bastard.
Yeah,
that's
he
all
is.
There is to say about it.
Yeah, because he's wearing the Hawaiian shirt the Joker had. He doesn't have the hat, but he has the camera. Wow.
It's
creepy. That's all I have to say.
I don't know what's going to happen here, but that two pages ties it into Death of the Family and made me go, boo!
Yep.
So, anyway, it was a good issue. Thanks, Gail. That was a great issue.
All right, now on to Batman.
Yep.
Batman, the main Death of the Family. Now, look, this had a lot of hype. There had a lot of hype about how the Joker looked. This is going to be, you know, one of those seminal Joker stories, blah, 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 blah.
How did it
live
up to the hype?
I think it's going
to
live up to it.
How did this first issue feel?
This is a horror story. Night of the Owls was an action story. Court of the Owls was an action story. This is a horror film, is what it is. When it opens up in the Gotham City police station, the lights go out, and you hear Joker coming in and just going from one cop to the other, snapping their necks. And you see the horror and the fear on Jim Gordon's face. That was stirring. And it was just the creepiest thing I've read in a really long time. Like, this...
It had me on the edge of my seat.
Yeah. Yeah. And the... Let's be straight. The look at the Joker when you see at the very end, delivered. He
looks didn't it.
Sick. And then have Harley Quinn even say, like, something happened to him. He's
not
changed.
Mr. J.
Yeah. It's like, wow. Now, this... I cannot wait to see how this unveils. I didn't pick up all the tie-ins to Night of the Owls. I think I am going to for Death of the Family. I'm actually going to pick up Catwoman. I never thought I'd ever say that. I'm going to pick up Catwoman.
He's so creepy looking.
And Suicide Squad. And all the other ones. I mean, I want to see how he's involved with everyone else. Because it was... This delivered.
Here's my question. Again, spoiler alerts. Do you think they're going to kill Alfred?
Oh, I don't think so. I think he'll be injured. I think how the family deals with his almost death, I think he'll be in a coma. But how the family deals with it, I think he'll be the starting pin to the dissolve of the Bat family. I really do. I think that's going to knock him to the core, because Alfred is what ties them all together, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Alfred. He's the moral compass. He's the one that brings light and humor into their world. And Dick Grayson does too, but I think he'll shatter Bruce when he realizes that Joker... I'm guessing Joker knows who Bruce Wayne is.
He has to. Why else would he show
up
at Wayne Manor hitting...
Exactly. So I think... So who knows... Well, here's a thought I just realized. Who knows if Batman's the one that says, I'm not doing this anymore. And that's the death of the family. Because when he doesn't do it anymore, it's not like he can't do it anymore because he's, you know, like he was dead in Final Crisis.
You're saying what if Batman retires?
I don't think he'll stay permanent, but I'm wondering if he'll retire. Or just like something will shatter him to his core and that kills the family.
Oh, that is an interesting concept.
I don't know. I won't last because we already had the Dick Grayson Batman. But is this where Damian takes on the mantle?
No, he's too young. He's 12.
It'd be fun to see, though.
He's too young.
But yeah, I think it'll shake.
Perfect. It was a perfect issue. Yeah. I can't wait for more.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Agent of Shade.
Frankenstein.
This is the Rot World one, right?
This is the Rot World, and it was... Matt Kent, I love you. I've loved your stuff from Frankenstein. This was the weakest issue. It really was.
It's a crossover. Sometimes people work really well with crossovers, just like we've talked about. Kyle Higgins does great with a crossover.
Yeah.
But some people, it doesn't work with what they want to do with the book.
The problem was the zero issue taking a break from the ongoing series. That's the issue. Because I was homeless for the last week and a half. I haven't even opened up my old comic book, so I couldn't go back and... Because it would have been nice to reread issue 12 before I read this, because I was like, oh, crap, I don't remember what's going on. It was cool to see Victor Frankenstein, who was introduced in issue 0, and how he ties into Arcane. The problem was just the pacing. It had cool concepts, but the pacing was just really off. It's like, is something going on in the future, in the past? I'm not quite sure. Like, it didn't really make a lot of sense. So
yeah.
I gave an explore it, but it's a low explore it. I might even say an ignore it.
Pick up Frankenstein once the crossover's over, maybe?
Yeah, or just see how the next one was. I mean, who knows? It could be great, the next issue.
Isn't it just this one crossover for him, though? I think it's only the one issue that's crossing over.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Because he's now in the world... This is what I'll say. It's cool to see... Because in Swamp Thing and Animal Man, it's a year later, and you see how everything went to crap. Mm-hmm. This one, you're kind of seeing it happen.
Interesting.
So that's cool. So if you are Swamp Thing and Animal Man... fan, you've been
you
reading that.
Probably
I would pick it up just because it was fun to see how it happened, like, immediately, but just the pacing was confusing, and so it was hard to really gravitate towards anything. So,
interesting.
Yeah, I still pick up this series. I think everyone should give it a try because I love Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, but it was the weakest issue of Matt Kent.
Interesting. All right, so next up we have Green Lantern Corps.
Green Lantern Corps, Third Army
this
crossover.
This is the Third Army crossover, because I know that this book has... consistently disappointed you.
Well,
with the exception of the
first story arc was cool, and then it went down.
It was the second story arc. Ever since we started the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
This has disappointed you until last month's zero issue. You loved Guy Gardner's
and
origin.
I loved this issue.
Did you?
I'm going to even explore it. I'm not going to give it a door. It was a solid issue. It wasn't as good as the zero issue, but still, like, the Third Army... they're creepy. I mean, they basically go around...
The way that they go around and stick their fingers into people's chests and then turn them into Third Army-ites.
Well, this one, they're sticking in their heads. Like, they're going through their head and turning... And then there's this one Green Lantern who's introduced in the first story arc, and they're kind of like... there's this group of four or five, and they're kind of the secret special ops of the Green Lantern Corps, and you really grow to love them.
The Black Ops guys?
Yeah, yeah. So, I forget what their names are. It's in issue 3 or 4. But anyway, one of them basically dies here.
Oh,
and it was,
no.
It was a stab in the heart, especially how it happens, because it is gruesome. And it's just like, the Guardians are awful.
We hate you, the Guardians. You suck.
And they are taking a villain who was introduced in the Zero issue who hates Guy Gardner. They released him to basically go just wreak havoc, and they're playing the Green Lantern Corps. They're playing Guy Gardner and toying with him, and like, wow, Guardians, you are evil.
I'm surprised that no one has disposed of those douchebags yet.
I hope it happens now.
After how many times they have been such douchebags, why does anyone ever... if all of the Green Lanterns teamed up,
they could kill them.
Lantern lasered them in the face,
because they
something?
Can kill now. They couldn't before, but ever since Sinestro Corps War, they can kill now.
Why haven't they killed the Guardians? Because the Guardians are douchebags.
But if you're doing the Green Lantern, if you're reading that for the Third Army, pick up Green Lantern Corps.
Because it ties in well.
The other two, I'm not sure yet. We'll find out later this month. But Green Lantern Corps is a great solid tie-in.
Do it. All right. Lastly, from DC and Vertigo, we have Punk Rock Jesus. And I think up to this point, we've had very, very similar opinions about this book. I think this is where we start to diverge a little bit.
Yes, it is.
How did you feel about this series, or about this issue?
This was for me, my least favorite. It was the weakest one, and this is why. Let's be straight. If you're a Christian, this could be very offensive to you.
Oh,
this could be the one where, like, yeah. I'm done with this series. I am a Christian, you know, I'm religious, but I recognize that this is social commentary again. So it's basically just saying how we as human beings like to proclaim people as our saviors, or look for something that basically look for God where he isn't, if that makes sense. And I think that's kind of exploring that in this issue right here. Like, you're forcing a label onto someone who never asked to be that label. And now his whole world is now changed because he sees the farce that corporation is. Slade, what's the guy's name?
Slade.
Slade, yeah. So he rebels as a result and basically says, everyone screw you. I'm, you know, whatever. So it's very
interesting. And watching his mother die.
Yeah,
that was so brutal.
So the only problem I have, it's not that, because I wasn't offended by it. The problem I have is the pacing.
Pacing wasn't quite as tight.
Because there's a lot of years that are skipped in this issue, and it just kind of...
It's not necessarily a lot of years. I think he's still 14.
Really?
I do. I think he's still 14, 15. I don't think that we get the huge skip forward in time in this one like we did in other issues.
Oh, well then it's still...
I think he's still little Chris. I think he's just little Jesus at age 14 with an amazing, amazing mohawk.
Yeah, the mohawk is cool. I like how he turned into a punk. For me, the pacing was just a little jarring, so it was hard to like really get into it.
This is not something that an archly religious person would like, because it rails against religion. It rails against... religious concepts and religious philosophies, and
dealing
it
with
basically,
science.
Yeah, it basically is a love letter to secularism.
Yeah,
and again, we see in the flashback, the big flashback about
Abraham Lincoln, his thoughts. You have Galileo?
Yeah, you've got Galileo. You've got Abraham Lincoln. You've got Darwin. You've got Carl Sagan. All of these champions of secularism.
How it became a political cause in the 1980s under Reagan. Mm-hmm. So,
but I think the most interesting part of the issue is the flashback to show Thomas's time with the IRA.
Yes, I thought that was interesting. I loved that.
Simply because you come to understand who Thomas is more and more. And that is part of why I think Chris is so adamantly against religion. Because why is Thomas who he is?
Because of religion.
Because he is a religious zealot. Mm-hmm. And so he sees these religious zealots get his mother killed in front of him. He sees these religious zealots turn Thomas into a weapon of death. And that's why it ends with him on stage with the flak jackets saying, "Hello, America, the most Christian nation on earth, the one that God has blessed. This is Jesus Christ coming to you from Lower Manhattan, telling you all, go F yourself. Jesus hates you." That's how the issue ended. It is so offensive, but it is so biting a social commentary that I loved it. Because, again, like we talked about last week, that Victories book, offensive, but not effectively offensive.
No, it was just dumb
gratuitous.
Offensive.
Yeah. It was pointless. This is offensive, but it's a provocative offensiveness. You're like, I am offended by this. Why? And it makes you analyze yourself.
Well, it makes you think. It
makes you think about your own attitudes and your own behavior.
Because let's be straight. Just because someone has a different viewpoint than you does not make them evil, doesn't make you evil or bigoted, whatever it is. It's if they can clearly say, this is why I have this viewpoint. And I feel like punk rock Jesus clearly shows the cons to religious society.
That it does.
And as I'm saying, I'm a religious person, but I can see why the points that they bring up and their effective points. Uh-huh. And that's what you want to have discussions for, and that's why you bring commentaries up, right? To get you thinking
and
of
that's,
your
and
social
that's what this
construct.
Book is. This book is provocative with a reason.
Yes.
I love Sean Murphy, though, and I love his art. He's who's doing the new Vertigo book with Scott Snyder.
He's doing
the art for Scott Snyder's new Vertigo book next year.
That would be great.
He looks so good. Team him with Snyder's writing. Oh, it'll be a pickup for sure.
Heaven.
Anyway, so a couple of quick image books here. Point of Impact is the first of a 4-issue series. This is a great looking book. When they said that it was going to be black and white, I figured it would be black and whites and grays. But just like Punk Rock Jesus, it's just blacks and whites. There is not a gray anywhere to be found. It is just blacks and whites. And it's done so effectively. This little book is going to be a miniseries worth picking up. It introduces 3 very different characters, 3 very different points of view of this situation. And we have to figure out, we're trying to solve this murder. We're trying to figure out who did it, why they did it.
Bless you.
Excuse me. That was my grandfather style one. That was a big one. Anyway, it was an oversized issue. There was tons in it. There wasn't a single bit of anything commercial till the very end. This was a steal of a deal. You should have all bought this this week. And then you two will be like, what's going to happen? There's a lot of great mysteries here, and they've set up a great tone and direction for the next three issues. I'm very excited to see where this goes. I was originally going to give it an explore, but the more I think about it, this might be an adore it. If the whole series stays up to this caliber, this is going to be one of Image's better books of the year. Last of Image books, Think Tank issue 3. I know a lot of people are loving this book. I am not one of them.
Yeah, you're going to drop it, aren't you?
I was going to give it this last little try. Screw this book. I'm done. Sorry, guys. Matt Hawkins and
strong words.
Ekedel.
Screw this book.
I don't like it. I just don't like it. He's so unlikable, and he's such a douche, and the main character sucks so bad. I'm finished with him. So ignore this book and ignore this series and whatever.
I always get that mixed up with Harvester. I don't know why.
Harbinger, you mean?
Harbinger. What's the one where the guy's like doing the whole organ
thing? Oh, The Harvest.
Harvest, yeah.
Harvest is great.
Yeah, I always get Harvest, that mixed up for some reason.
Think Tank, don't bother. Anyway, that's Image. Let's talk Marvel. Avenging Spider-Man. If you read last issue's crossover with Deadpool, you were in for this issue, and you should have enjoyed it. I'll be talking a bit more about this in the villain moment of the week. This was an incredible, incredible issue. I love this book. And like I talked about earlier when we were talking yesterday about the Superior Spider-Man, I don't know what's going to happen to this book with the new Spider-Man book. I hope it doesn't get canceled because I love Avenging Spider-Man. It's lighthearted. It's fun. It's funky. It's a lot of enjoyment. And they even make fun of Ryan Reynolds being Deadpool in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's that sort of
entertaining.
So that's what
Ryan Reynolds was good when he was talking.
It was hilarious. They were making fun of how bad Deadpool was treated in the movies, essentially.
Oh, good.
It was
crapping on Deadpool is what it was.
Yeah, there's a scene near the end that I'll talk about in just a moment where they do some costume. Well, I guess that's not my villain moment, so I'll talk about it now. They do a costume switch to trick Hypno Hustler, and there's this one-page spread of Deadpool stabbing Spider-Man through the chest. And it's got a bar over it that says, "Censored by the man!" It's that kind of book. I mean, there's no blood or anything, but it's a sword through Spider-Man's chest, but it's really Deadpool, so it's all good. It's that kind of book. You should all be buying it. It's a really great book. Anyway, I adored it. It was a great issue.
It's always sold out in my comic shop when I get there.
That's because it's so great.
I don't put it on my pull list because it's just, you know, because
it's like a pick-up once a month thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Hopefully it's at a comic shop, which we'll be visiting today.
Yeah, we're going to be headed up to a comic shop that Darren's never been to before. So
I'm excited.
It's a great little store. I'm excited. Anyway, next up, AVX Consequences, number one. I thought this was going to be little vignettes, essentially, of where characters are after AVX. But no, this is basically a little miniseries to tie up the other miniseries. And I like where it's headed. It's not perfect, but it's provocative. And so I hope to see the real consequences of AVX and how everything ended. So I'm hopeful for this book. I'm going to give this one an explore it. We're going to see if it continues. It continues to be as good as this first issue was, but I was pretty impressed by it. Also, it had Captain America's new outfit, which is not in all of the books. It wasn't in Uncanny Avengers.
Oh, that's true.
I can't decide when and where he's getting the new costume and when he's getting the slightly updated old costume. They need a little more direction, guys.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I like the new costume.
I like the new costume. I wish everyone was using the new costume. Yeah. But whatever.
I like, and this is probably going to be blasphemous, but I like the wings painted on instead of them sticking out. Like how the new costume has.
I have the feels about both of them.
Yeah.
I really like the painted on because it makes me think of the movie.
Exactly.
And I really like the wingies because it makes me think of Captain America is awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have all the feels about them. All the feels. Anyway, Captain America, this book
was not that great.
This book. This tied up everything. So I don't know what the heck issue 19 is for. Because issue 18 tied up everything. Essentially, other than one little possible thing on the very last page. But Brubaker's going out with a fizzle, not with a bang.
That's too bad.
And it's I think it's because he's co-writing with Cullen Bunn.
This is his last one, isn't it?
One more issue.
One more issue.
One more issue. I think it's because he's co-writing with another writer. And
do you think he's phoning it in?
I don't know. Because he's certainly, it's not like he's phoning in everything. Because Fatale is great and Winter Soldier is phenomenal.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about just Captain America right now. Because he's like, he's probably maybe done, tired, moving on to something else.
Maybe. I remember a couple of issues ago, I was really excited about this arc. Mm-hmm. It ended with such a fizzle. It was so pointless. And I'm giving it an ignore it. It's a shame. I really didn't like it. Okay. Onward and upward. Red She-Hulk. Adore it. I needed a little bit of recapping to go into this, but they gave me very good-sized recap pages twice throughout this to explain who Red Hulk was and who Red She-Hulk was.
Betty Ross.
And why I should know who both of them are.
Right, Betty Ross?
Uh-huh.
And she died and came back?
Uh-huh. Well, they used the Red Hulk stuff to bring her back.
Oh,
that's... She was in a terminal condition. She was, like, in a coma.
And so remember in Planet Hulk, she was gone.
Yeah, she was in a coma. They used the radiation that made her father the Hulk to save her. And so now she's back, and she's back with a vengeance. This picks up exactly where the Hulk book left off. So if you've been reading the Red Hulk book up through issue 57,
it'll make sense.
Because it drops you right into this General Fortean, who's been the bad guy of the Hulk book for the last 20, 30 issues. And he drops you right in into the middle of this and his situation. And he's a jerk, and Betty Ross hands it to his... He's trying to create, basically, super soldiers for the government.
Oh, he's the new General Ross, basically.
Uh-huh. He's taken over General Ross's place, essentially. And Red She-Hulk is not putting up with any of that crap. She is kicking their butts and taking their names, and she does. There's a lot of fighting in this book, and it's really well scripted. The art is extremely evocative. You just watch people get their butts kicked.
Yeah,
she murders a dude near the end.
Whoa.
Because she punches him so hard that his neck twists clean around 180 degrees.
Betty Ross. Wow.
Check that out. That's murder.
Wow.
Crack.
Ugh.
Snapped his neck right
there. That's
gross. Yeah, well, he's a douche. He did just say he was going to rape her, so...
Oh, he did?
Well, not rape her, but, hey, they're trying to make super soldiers. Let's you and me do it. Maybe they'll pay us. So she snaps his arms, punches him so hard that his neck snaps in half.
He deserves it.
Yep. And so she... the goal with this book was to make a Hulk that the whole Marvel Universe could be scared of again. This is where it's going. It's going to work!
Does she go back to Betty Ross human, or does she stay?
She can. She can. She went back to hide to get into that facility to punch that dude. So she can go back and forth at will. It's not an anger thing like Bruce Banner is most of the time. Who knows what the situation is at this point. She and Thunderbolt Ross can both go back and forth from Hulk's at will. So that's a cool feature.
Yeah.
And they're not quite as strong. They're not quite as strong as Bruce Banner's Hulk is, but
because it's Bruce Banner's.
They're
Hulk.
Pretty strong. Also,
he
there
is
was
the
Machine Man, and I love Machine Man. He makes a cameo, and he's going to be in the next issue quite a bit. So, anytime you get Machine Man around, I'm in. He's cool. I adored this. So keep it up, Jeff Parker. Keep it up. I enjoyed it. Next up, Ultimate Comics X-Men. It's Brian Wood week. What more do I need to say? It's Brian Wood week. He's great. This is continuing the United We Stand storyline. This is what's happening in the mutant half. I don't know what's going to happen in the rest of this series. We are getting the next issue 2 weeks from now. They won't show me what the cover is.
Whoa, classified.
They won't show. This is what it showed when President Cap was becoming President Cap. They didn't show me what the cover was. So I'm curious to see where they're going to go with this. Because it ends on a pretty big note. A lot of Sentinels coming to destroy the mutant army that's building in the Southwest. So it's going to end poorly for everyone, but maybe not. Kitty Pryde is an amazing leader of the X-Men. I have always loved Kitty Pryde. She's always been one of my favorite X-Men. So to watch her leading this team is pretty great. Also, Ultimate Rogue met someone whose power is not affected by hers, and so...
Is it a male?
It is. So oh. She's finally... It was been really touching the last two issues to finally see Rogue see a little bit of tenderness.
Mm-hmm.
Because they make out a lot, because why not?
Well, I was going to ask, are they dating? I'm glad they are. Because she just, look, it's been a long
time.
She
needs a little bit of tenderness, and she's never had
anyone
any
does.
In the Ultimate Universe.
You know, really. It's interesting. They actually, scientific studies show the power that even human physical touch can do to people, and its healing qualities, and even with babies and children,
babies
how they
need
develop
it.
And grow.
How babies need
is
it.
Is through physical touch.
Yeah.
Not that, like, that's the only thing, but it makes a huge difference with their development. Physical human touch.
Oh, yeah. Also, there's been an introduction to a lot of ultimate versions of mutants who we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, which was nice. Brian Wood is great. I loved it. I adored it. You should be buying it. That's all. It's a stellar story. I really enjoyed it. Okay, Uncanny Avengers.
Uncanny Avengers.
How'd you feel about Uncanny Avengers?
I'm mixed. This is why. Okay. This is a Marvel Now, right?
It's
supposed
this
to be a way for
Marvel
new
now.
Readers or old readers to jump right in. This has a lot of backstory with Avengers vs. X-Men, which I've not been reading. And so if you pick it up, you're like, the only reason I really know is because we've been talking about it this whole podcast, right? That's the only reason I really
know. I mean,
there's
not even a recap page.
No, there's not. And so you pick it up, you're like, what? Why is Cyclops, and I know why he's in jail, but... As I'm saying, if you're someone who's new to comics, or if you're a relapsed reader coming in, you're like, Cyclops in jail?
Well, I think they explain it pretty subtly that he's obviously the one who killed Charles Xavier.
Oh, yeah, but still, like, why would Cyclops kill Charles Xavier? You know what I mean? This isn't a book that's going to bring in new readers, and maybe not even relapsed readers, I think.
Depends on how they roll after that last 3-4 pages when it
yeah,
got really
Yeah, the last little bit was great, but before that, I'm like, this is kind of whatever.
It suffered from what most first issues suffer from. A lot of exposition.
Yeah.
But there's
a lot of backstory.
When Rogue and Scarlet Witch get together and poor Scarlet Witch gets stabbed through the guts.
Yep.
And then that last 2 pages... Ooh, Red Skull is
yeah.
good bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great bad guy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I after those last 2 pages, I was like, this is a Rick Remender book! It finally started feeling like a Remender book.
Yeah.
Because the first 15 pages, I was like...
So I'm gonna
John Cassidy's art is great. John Cassidy does wonderful work.
So I'm going to be picking it up because of the last page, honestly.
Oh, I'm picking up at least through this first story arc, the first 4 issues.
Look, New 52 Justice League... Yeah, Jim Lee and Geoff Johns doing that book. It honestly started the New 52, I feel like, with a bang. Like, it got you excited, a big action romp. For the first book of Marvel Now, I didn't feel like it delivered. I was expecting a little bit more.
Yeah. I feel like the big Marvel Now stuff is going to be all those number ones in
October.
In November,
but or on November. But even then, though, they're one team-up book to get everything started. Uncanny Avengers.
I just think it's interesting that it looks like it's going to be Havoc who's the leader of the team.
Yeah.
Of all the people...
I really don't like his costume.
And I don't really like it necessarily either, but when I read about how he was going to be the main character, like the leader of the team, I was like, wait, step back a minute. Havoc, Scott's lame younger brother, is going to be the leader of the team, but I have to give Remender credit.
It
makes sense. He needs to be the leader of the team.
Uh-huh.
And I loved the conversation between he and Scott.
Oh, yeah.
It was extremely well done. So, again, maybe it's not perfect for bringing in new readers. We'll talk about that in the thought of the week. But I enjoyed it, ultimately. I'm giving it a high explore it. It's a very solid first issue. It's a little too expository, but that... Man, the Red Skull.
See, I'm giving a solid explore.
Man, the Red Skull.
Solid.
Man, the just, Red Skull.
I know. But it was okay. It was explore it.
Yeah. Okay, just a few more to go. We're wrapping it up here soon. Stumptown, issue 2 by Greg Rucka, Matthew Southworth, and Rico Renzi. This is great. This was phenomenal. This was unlike anything I bought this week. And that's a good thing. That's all I have to say about it. It was unlike anything I bought this week. It's Rucka at its finest. If you like mysteries, if you like alternative comics, things that aren't superheroes beating each other up, pick up Stumptown. I wish I had read... I am enjoying it. I don't need the backstory, but when this is done, I'm going to go read Volume 1, And then I'm going to read some of the novels that are also take place with these characters.
Does Greg Rucka write those novels?
Yes, he was a novelist before he was a comic book writer.
Really?
Uh-huh. He wrote novels first. And this is built into this world that he's... this version of Portland that he's written all of these books in. And I love Rucka's writing style, so I'm going to start reading some of his prose novels when I'm done with this. Anyway, I adored it. I thought it was great. And it, like I say, it was unlike anything I read this weekend. That was a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap up Valiant really quick, because I feel like neither of us have too much to say about it. Both Archer and Armstrong and Bloodshot came out this week, and both of them were just not that good of issues.
No, yeah,
neither of them were very good issues.
No. I'm going to get Archer and Armstrong number 4, but I'm definitely dropping after that.
Yeah. Just so I have the full story arc.
Yep. Yep. And Bloodshot, I'm not picking up
Bloodshot
anymore.
I'm done. And Archer and Armstrong, I think I'll...
See, Bloodshot, though, was the one I was actually most excited about in the beginning. I'm like, oh, that's going to be really good. And then it just kind of... it's fizzled out as it's gone on. Archer and Armstrong...
okay. They're okay. If you're not buying other books, they're good. But there are so many other things, especially with Marvel Now coming out next month.
An Image. I mean, you love your Image stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I need the money for other things. So I'm going to drop all of our books other than XO.
Yeah, and I'm dropping them all. I'm going to check out Shadow Man when it comes out.
Well, you check out Shadow Man. I'll keep buying XO.
Okay.
And we'll switch them.
All right, sounds
good.
We'll
share.
So last
Sharing
up
is caring, after all.
Excuse me. Last up is a Kickstarter that we interviewed for John Graham for Holiday Hooligans, and I finally got in the mail last week, and so I want to review it real quick. Holiday Hooligans Origin. It's a zero issue. It is about three characters. You have
You've got the ninja bread man.
Yeah, the brew cake ninja bread man,
and then Karate Kane.
Karate Kane, yes. And let's be straight. This is Ninja Turtles meets holiday food cakes, or holiday food, and it is awesome. The artwork by Mitch Heslop is so fun and just so perfect for the writing style of John Graham.
It really
Graham.
Is,
and it's support this comic because I want to see what happens to these characters. I want to see how they develop. I want to see who they fight. And look, this is all ages. And I'm saying all ages because it does include adults. It's not just a kids thing. It's an all-ages book for kids. It's an all-ages book.
Cool.
If you like Ninja Turtles, this will be nostalgic.
And who doesn't love a good, like, independently published comic that succeeds?
Yeah.
We love when our Kickstarters that we interview fund, and this was one of them that funded, and we're really excited that it did.
Yeah, so this is what you can do to go pick it up. There's a couple ways. So you can either go to... So John first wrote a book, a children's book called No Sweets for Santa.
Uh-huh.
So you can go to No Sweets, and sweets plural, nosweetsforsanta.com.
Four as in the word F-O-R.
Yes. Nosweetsforsanta.com. And that has... you should also check out No Sweets for Santa. That's a great, great children's book for the holidays. But that's where you can get Holiday Hooligans. You can also go to... let me pull it up here. You can also go to indieplanet.com. You can pick it up there. Or you can just email or go to John@Fidget, F-I-G, as in good, F-I-G-I-D as in dog, press.com for orders and questions. Email him. He'll let you know what you can do. But indieplanet.com, nosweetsforsanta.com, or just email John directly, John@fidgetpress.com.
We know John's going to be – he was at New York Comic Con this last weekend.
He'll be
we know
at Harrisburg, Pennsylvania Comic Con.
So we hope you're having a good time, John.
But, oh, yeah. Ninja Bread Man, Brew Cake, Karate Kane. And Ninja Bread Man is the one that it starts off with. He is my personal favorite. His origin story and the fact when he just puts on his bandana and ties it.
It's pretty dang cute.
I love it. I love it. Really, everyone, go pick this up. I think it's $3-4. It's totally worth it. And once again, it's an independent comic.
You're supporting
like, you
independent
support those.
People. And who doesn't want to support those
kind
of people?
And John is a great, great, great guy. And yeah, totally love it.
Yeah.
Totally
well,
love
I,
it.
I read it. I read Darren's copy. I'm definitely going to go buy my own copy because it was great.
Well, and some of my family members, after they heard the interview, like, I really want to check that out. So I think my nephew ordered it. And one of my brothers ordered it.
Cool. Well, so, we're spreading the love. Everyone should go buy John Graham's book because he's
do.
A great guy and it was a hilarious
book. It was awesome.
All right. So let's talk about hero and villain moments of the week. What was your hero moment this week, Darren?
My hero moment was in Batgirl and it... Look, you know how I feel about Barbara Gordon.
Oh, yes. We know how you feel about Barbara Gordon.
But
how'd you feel about Barbara not Gordon in Batman and Robin? Y'all find out on Wednesday. We're doing a review of Batman and Robin on Wednesday.
I will save how I feel about it, but I'll just give you a little teaser.
Just go, let's do it on Wednesday.
I hate it.
Just listen.
Sorry, that was really bad. I hate it.
You're going to love it.
I want to strangle that concept and then kick it in the groin.
Ooh.
Oh, I'm so... Anyway, so...
Anyway, back to Barbara Gordon,
back to the
love.
Real Barbara Gordon, who is the daughter of Jim Gordon,
and
not
a redhead.
Not the niece of Alfred Pennyworth. Oh, gosh. Anyway, so...
Jinx, buy me a Coke.
I was coughing and laughing at the same time. I can do that. Anyway, so... Look, there's the prisoner Ricky, who has been taken by Nightfall and mutilated.
Well, he was the dude who got his leg chopped in a bear trap. Yeah.
So anyway,
issue 10.
So look, Barbara Gordon is getting her butt handed to her by Nightfall, stabbed, just totally wasted, bleeding. And what happens? She finally does beat Nightfall. But I love this thing where Ricky's in jail, right? And he just says, "Look, you won. You beat her, and you don't look so good." And she's kind of all dizzy and dazed, like, "Really? I was just about to say, you look kind of like a hero right now." Just being totally. I just love how, like, oh, if she said that to me, my heart would melt. I would be like, "Can I, even though you're bleeding and you have blood all over your mouth, just make out with me now, please?" But anyway,
single.
I know. I just love how she was totally, like, about to die, you know, bleeding to death, and she's flirting with this guy who she had a very tender moment with a couple issues back. And it's just that moment right there is why I love Barbara Gordon. And why I think she's a great addition to the Bat family. And why I'm glad she is not Oracle anymore, but she's actually Batgirl again. Because I love her personality.
You're in the minority there.
I know I am.
But
I know
we're glad somebody feels that way.
I know I am.
My hero moment of the week comes from the Marvel Now title, Red She-Hulk, which is technically a Marvel Now title.
It is.
I was surprised that they put that on it, but it is a Marvel Now title. It comes from when she's fighting these echelon soldiers who are supposed to be super soldiers, and she basically hands them their butts. And it's just this one scene where she's fighting the one who's supposed to be the tank, essentially, and she says to him, "You ready to go back to boot camp, soldier?" And proceeds to beat the crap out of him. And then throws him at the generals and says, "Here's your next generation fighting force. Shut down Echelon, or you're going to see a lot more of this." And then she takes off. And so what happens? The politicians say to the general, "How much funding do you want?" Talk about backfiring, but it was a great fight scene. It was a great fight scene. Anyway, I really liked Red She-Hulk. My villain moment of the week, however, comes from Avenging Spider-Man, which is a Deadpool Wow comic instead of a Marvel Now comic.
Deadpool Now.
Deadpool Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When you write Deadpool,
you gotta have fun with it.
You gotta play with it, and they play with Deadpool a lot. Anyway, for those of you who don't know, this has the Hypno Hustler who causes people to see visions of weird things, and that's what the whole first issue was about, was Spider-Man seeing weird visions, and he thought he was in a dream. And that, anyway, he traps Deadpool in this dream, and Deadpool's dream is smashing an egg head that is Spider-Man's head, like an egg, smashing the yolk out of it, while singing "Let's Do the Time Warp Again," dressed like Dr. Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror Picture Show. And who doesn't want to see
Deadpool
dressed as Dr. Frankenfurter? It was beautiful. Singing "Let's Do the Time Warp Again." It was great. I love Avenging Spider-Man, and I hope it doesn't go the way of the dodo after Superior Spider-Man comes along.
Mine is, and look, this is a spoiler.
Spoilers!
For Uncanny Avengers. The ending. The last page.
Wow.
Red Skull taking the brain of Professor X. Ugh, creepy image. You're desecrating. Desecrating the grave and the brain, his power. That is his power, his brain.
That's what's going to make it so interesting.
Yeah.
Red Skull is trying to use Xavier's brain for good and for evil.
For
awesome.
Yeah, it's not good. It's evil and awesome. That was just like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
That was a great villain moment. It's like, Red Skull, you're evil. And that's why I love you as a villain. Because he's so, it's like in the comic or in the Captain America movie, he's just so big. He just wants to rule the world. Like, it's very simple. There's no complex things. Like, I want to rule the world. That's how I'm going to do it. And it's just, I want to dig his brain. Yeah, I don't know.
Red Skull,
I loved it.
Red Skull's a great bad guy. That's why I was sold in those last two pages. Yeah. I was like, Red Skull is the best. I'm in. So, yeah. Anyway, go pick it up. It was pretty good. Anyway, that's our reviews episode for this week, clocking in at a lot of minutes, but that's okay because we reviewed a ton of stuff. Let us know what you read. We want to hear here at our blog, here at our, we want to hear at our Facebook page, our Twitter page. Email us at talk@betweenthebubbles.com. You can email either one of us directly, Darren at Between the Bubbles or Braden at Between the Bubbles. We just want to hear from you. We just love you guys, and we hope you keep listening. And, as always, happy reading.